It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Access of Easy. This is number 320. This is the audio compendium, sidekick, companion to the weekly newsletter. You can subscribe at accessofeasy.com, or you could follow Len and I doing the podcast on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. Just search for Access of Easy. Same name, same spacing, same all that stuff. And tune in every week. Buddy, what's going on in your neck of the woods? How are you doing tonight?
That's good, Joey. I like that we have coordinated our wardrobe accordingly. You're wearing the CBP shirt, and I'm wearing the Easy DNS shirt. I know that Mark was on our show yesterday. You did a fantastic job interviewing him, and he wore this shirt on the show, and that kind of clued me in. I got to wear it for this show. It's been a few weeks since I've done it. And yeah, but everything is good. How about you, Joey?
I'm good, man. Just went for dinner with my mother. Nice time, nice meal here in Dundas, Ontario. I'm ready to go to sleep, honestly. I got a new dog, as you know, and it's been like 2 weeks since I've slept through the night because that little guy needs to pee once or twice a night, you know, minimum. So
what's his name?
Moose.
Moose, that's right. Sabrina was asking, my little girl. And drew blank, but yeah, man, okay.
He's a handful. But anyway, I mean, not going to stop us. This train continues to roll, no matter how tired, no matter what we got going on. So, let's start as we usually do with last week's quote. When any government or any church, for that matter, undertakes to say to its subjects, "This you may not read. This you must not see. This you are forbidden to know," the end result is tyranny and oppression, no matter how holy the motives. That was by Robert. I'm going to mess up this last name. It's spelled Heinlein, but I suspect it's Heinlein. And the winner was Bill. So good job, Bill. Shout to you. And this week's quote, when a government takes over a people's economic life, it becomes absolute. And when it has become absolute, it destroys the arts, the minds, the liberties, and the meaning of the people it governs. Now, if you know who that quote's by, listener, viewer, put in the comments. No searching, no Googling. You guys know the deal. Don't pervert the process. And if you win, the next domain hosting renewal is on Mark and team over at EasyDNS. So do that. Put it in the comments. And again, don't cheat. No cheating. We don't like that here. Len, we got lots to discuss today. There's, I think, five stories. How many here? One, two, five. Three, four, five stories. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a standard five.
Let's hit it. Where do you want to start?
Well, browsers. Let's talk about them. And Brian Krebs, the security researcher, he's reporting about a very old scam that continues to trick people into downloading malware. And they do so by pretending to be a browser update. Holy cow, man. People are dumb. The scammer hacks a legitimate website and injects code.
Let's just talk about how when we first started doing this, I think we like chose our words a little more, you know, judiciously. We're a little more democratic in our assessment. Leading off this week, holy cow, people are dumb.
They are dumb. Yeah. Well, anyway, so how this happens is, a legitimate website is attacked and hacked by a scammer, and the scammer, he, she, it, whatever, injects code into it and redirects visitors to the fake website. And the victim visits the legitimate website and it's redirected, obviously. And the fake website displays a message that the victim needs to update their browser, and they got to do so right away. And the victim obviously goes through the whole process, clicks on the update button, and downloads, unfortunately, a malicious file through there. And that malicious file is then on the computer, and the computer is now infected with malware. And the scammers, they're using these hacked websites to host malicious files anonymously on a cryptocurrency blockchain. And try doing some research on this, which blockchain it was. It's got to be something like ETH or Ethereum, or maybe
it's BSC. It looks like Binance Star Chain.
It's one of those crap coins. Altcoins. I don't want to say what it is. You know what it is. Anyways, because it's stored on these blockchains and it's done so anonymously, it's making it difficult for security research to take down the scam. And people really should never download stuff from untrusted websites. And of course, we've been telling people to keep up to date, but a lot of this is done automatically. I run Linux. I don't run a variety of Linux. I run actually several of them. This one I'm running Kubuntu. And from there, I could just go to the one-stop shop where it just downloads it for me. That's automatically done, and I just click on it, install. I'm sure other operating systems that are not as less user-friendly as the one I have it even better. Stuff just automatically downloads. So people need to like set up their automatic downloads. Let it do its thing for you, and you're good to go. Don't rely on something like that. Don't get tricked. And even if you're clicking on something, especially when you're downloading something, make sure it's from a legitimate source. One thing that I've been doing lately is I've been checking the SHA, the hash output from the file to ensure that it is indeed the proper file. People should start learning how to do this. By doing so, you are guaranteeing that the file is from the legitimate source and it's not screwing your computer up. So learn how to do that. Learn how to check the SHA, the output of that, and try to determine if it is indeed correct. Because there's lots of options for people out there to ensure you don't get tricked like this. This old trick, unfortunately, is tricking a lot of new folks out there. It's too bad.
I don't have much to say to this, so I'm going to put the spotlight back on you for this story. Do you have a browser recommendation, Len, that you like? Because they mentioned here the sort of, you know, heavy hitters, the Chrome, the Edge. What do you use that you know, both like the functionality of and the security of? Is there something that's FOSS out there that you're using that makes sense for people?
So for my phone, Vanadium, and that's native to Graphene OS. I don't believe you could get that for any other phone software out there. So it's Vanadium. It's fantastic. It's a hardened version of Chrome. For my desktop, I use either Tor, the native Tor browser, or Firefox. I like Firefox. It's pretty darn good. A lot of people talk about Brave. The fact that they have that crap coin on it. So it deters me from using it. Firefox is pretty good. It's open source. You can look at the code. And it's been around for a long time. A lot of people like it for the most part. I don't think there's any red flags with it right now. I don't really submit any information, to be honest. You can sign up for an account and everything, so it stores your password. I tend not to do that. So it's just basically, it's a very generic, easy-to-use browser that works for me. So that's what I would recommend, but do your own research.
I like it. I'm an Edge user most of the time for my professional endeavors, and I don't do much browsing on this computer. Like, this is the show computer, as I've said many times. I use Edge on here as well. I'm not really the target audience for something like this, though. Like, I know that Edge is not going to give me an update prompt. Anything that's baked into your browser is updated either through a separate menu or through your Windows update. So, again, being careful is probably the most, you know, important thing that anyone can do. Kind of be diligent with the updates you do and be diligent with the things you click. It's the lesson that we talk about on the show every week, and it's another example here tonight.
Well, let's keep this moving. Gentleman by the name of Amir Golstan. Hope I pronounced his last name correctly. He's a 40-year-old CEO of the Charleston, South Carolina-based technology company called Micfo LLC. And this gentleman, Mr. Golstan, was sentenced to prison for fraud. And he was using a network of shell companies to obtain IP addresses from the American Registry for Internet Numbers, the ARIN, A-R-I-N. I'm going to call it A-R-I-N. I'm not sure if ARIN is correct. Anyways, he did so getting these IP addresses under false pretenses. Then once he get his hands on these IP addresses, he then turned around and sold these addresses for millions of dollars. Eventually, the dude was caught and sentenced to 5 years in prison. And this scheme began many years ago, 2019. This is pre-COVID, so this is a different time, different world. And when he started creating these shell companies, and he would use these, apply for the IP addresses. And keep in mind, ARIN is a nonprofit organization that manages the IP addresses, and they assign the IP addresses to businesses and organizations, and it requires the applicants to provide accurate information about their company. Well, Mr. Goldstein, however, was using fake information for applying these IP addresses, and he would create fake web addresses, fake email addresses for a shell company, and even would provide fake references. Unfortunately, nobody called me. If they did so, I would have outed him and shown that he's actually a bad player. But anyways, ARIN approved Goldstein's applications, and as a result, he was able to obtain hundreds of these IP addresses. Man, that's a lot. So this scheme eventually came to an end in 2021. When ARIN discovered he was using fake information to apply for this. But really, it goes to show you how valuable some IP addresses are. And IPv4 or IP4 it's running out of IP addresses. We talked about it in the past. IPv6 is going to be coming out. This is going to address that problem along with a whole host of other problems. But I didn't realize that IP addresses can potentially have some value to this. Is pretty insane stuff. But you know what? This might be an indication for people out there to want to do anything similar. You will get caught. And when you do, you're going to do some hard time as a result.
Yeah, you, hiding your IP address is important. Like, we talk a lot on this program and on CBP, actually a little more than I thought we would, about the importance of, like, you know, VPNs and things like this. And there's a VPN tie-in here. It looks like MICFO or MICFO was at one point brokering, according to the article, 40% of the IP addresses used by the world's largest VPN providers. So you got a nefarious actor here who's kind of intertwined with some of the VPN providers around the world. There's no safe haven, right? And I think you've in the past mentioned that, you know, you laughed at me when I said that my iPhone has a built-in VPN, right? Like, it's the least trustworthy thing in the world to, like, hand over that kind of responsibility to your app, to Apple, to your iPhone, you know, internals. Now, again, not to do this twice in a row, but I want to shine a spotlight on the service you use. You use a VPN service that's pretty highly regarded in the Bitcoin space, and the name escapes me. Tell me why and what it's called.
Mulvad VPN, based out of Sweden, and you could pay with Bitcoin when you sign up. You don't sign up with an email address or anything else. It's basically, it assigns you a randomly generated number, right? And from that you could then pay with Bitcoin. The fee, I believe, is around €6 a month. I could be wrong, but it's really, really close to that. And from what I understand, Mulvad, they shred all their records after a short period of time, 30 days, I think. I could be wrong on that. So they don't keep anything. There's actually, so because of that, there's no indication who you are, no email address. If you're paying with Bitcoin, well, try finding out who it is I like it. It works really well. And when you sign up, for people who have not ever used it, you get 5 devices. So when you sign up to Mulvad, you can use up to 5 devices for that one payment you've done. I have no affiliation with Mulvad. They don't pay me to do this. I just like the product. And again, do your own research.
Yeah, I think, again, like, there's not much you can do about this. Like, this is a pretty, it seems to me, you know, sophisticated scheme here to grab what the article calls internet resources and have them sold. Maybe we should do some research on what these things are really worth. I know you mentioned it. Like, this is, seems like a lot of money for IP addresses. Yeah. So, like, what is the, the technical connection there must be above my head, but certainly there's something here that we're missing that makes these things that valuable.
I don't know. I'd have to look at the IP address. From there, you could figure out the subnet mask, and it could actually, then you could see how many IP addresses would have been assigned. I'm wondering if that's the case, if it's just a lot of them, a block of them, or if it's just singular IP addresses. This, I don't know. I know one thing though, for sure, is IP addresses, they're scarce. They should be scarce because there's not enough to meet the demand right now. So the ISPs and everybody else is trying to be very creative in terms of hiding IP addresses and just recycling and so forth. But with all these devices coming online, these Internet of Things, phones, computers, everything.
More and more, right?
Just tapping into this limited supply. But let's.
And so the other thing too is, like, the, not to drag the story on, but you know, it just increases surface area as we add more addresses, more standards for addresses, right? You're just increasing surface area for attack, and you're kind of seeing that here. And these guys are, not that this fella is necessarily that bright. He actually kind of looks like that Mario Narfall guy. I don't know if you know what that guy looks like on X or Twitter. He looks very, very similar. So sort of a scammer physiognomy there. But anyway,
NFT dude.
The surface area is growing. That's all I'll say. I don't want to get myself any more trouble than I probably just did. So,
this is factual. He's an NFT dude. He was, I believe, he was shilling it not too long ago. So, it's out there in the open. But something else that's in the open is a Saskatchewan nurse named Leah McInnes, and she's unfortunately going through the motions of being punished for her views of the COVID-19 vaccine mandate. Now, I tried looking at various sources of this. Some media sites were actually hiding her identification, so, and others are willingly giving it up. So I found it very interesting. But the College of Registered Nurses in Saskatchewan, they're seeking to punish her for participating in a protest and posting her views on social media with respect to the COVID-19 vaccine mandate. And a lawyer for the nurse representing her says that this is troubling in light of a recent court ruling that overturned a similar punishment. And the court ruled that nurses have the right to criticize the healthcare system. This is some of the rights that Canadians do have. And Ms. McInnes is accused of unprofessional conduct for participating in a protest against the mandates back in January. And this was done in Regina, Saskatchewan. It must have been very cold in Regina in January. So good for her to go out there. Everybody out there is they're hard as nails, man. But she was accused of posting her views on social media, which the college says could undermine public confidence in the nursing profession. I could kind of understand that. And the college is seeking a reprimand, a fine, or suspension of the nurse's license. And of course, this is colleges they're saying that this is pretty bad stuff, but the lawyer for him is saying that this is a violation of her rights, and she has a right to express her opinions and her views, especially on stuff with regards to public interest. Now, it's a fine line here. If you're criticizing the government and the government that employs you, it could be a difficult road to go down, but ultimately, I do believe that we as individuals, as Canadians, we have the right to express our viewpoints about just about anything. Now, given that she's a nurse and she's saying something, maybe somebody would look on what she's saying as maybe coming from the medical profession, and it may be coming from the medical profession as a whole. But again, people have the rights to express their beliefs or disbeliefs about something. Now, we've seen what happened over the past little while, the vaccine, in terms of its impact on people's health. I don't want to say too much about this. People can make their own decisions here. So maybe, you know, it seems rather funny here to what's going on. And I wish her the best. I hope she doesn't lose her job. And not for this reason. I just don't want anybody to lose their job. That's my opinion. So what are your thoughts on this story?
There's questions about efficacy, obviously, of all those things, not just the vaccine, but the lockdowns. And, you know, I'm hesitant to pass judgment on the college registered nurses or on Leah, because I don't know exactly what her comments were. There is a right, I think, for a lot of Canadians to criticize policy positions of their employer, their government, whatever. That's fine. But what is the likelihood that these included like personal attacks against certain individuals, right? Whether it's a government official or someone in the college or whatever. I don't think your rights extend that far. You know, I don't think your rights extend to the point where you can say those things and expect not to be disciplined, punished, or, you know, in some cases terminated. And so I'm curious about exactly the nature of the comments. That said, if I look across the, you know, landscape of the last 3 or 4 years, the likelihood that this is, you know, a broad stroke action for, you know, as you mentioned, similar comments that were seen to be improper at the time, but, you know, in retrospect and sort of in the eyes of the law now, seem to be fair, I think it's probably pretty high. So let's see where this shakes out. I'm curious about where this one goes, because without seeing really the comments themselves, it's hard to say. It's one thing, like I mentioned, to criticize a policy that your employer has or your government has. It's another thing entirely to take pot shots at somebody. And that second one, I don't think you're exempt from consequences for personally, but let's see where this goes.
That's a very good take. I didn't think about that. Something else that we should talk about is what's going on in California. Now, this is a really interesting story because, to be perfectly honest, I didn't think California would do this type of thing. Now, it's a new California law that gives residents the rights to have their personal data deleted by data brokers. And the law, which was signed by Governor Gavin Newsom in October 10th, 2023, so just a week and change ago, requires data brokers to register with the state and allows residents to submit one request to have their data deleted from all registered brokers. I find this to be an interesting law. And the law defines a data broker as any company that collects and sells personal information about consumers. And this includes companies that collect data from public records, social media, and other online sources. So they're simply just trolling the internet to get the information for the most part. The law does not apply to data brokers that are located outside of California. So those duck cleaning calls that you're getting from Johnny with an Indian accent, unfortunately, they're going to be able to skirt around this law. But if it's going to be Jose from LA, unfortunately, he's going to be subjected to this law. Data brokers, they're arguing that this law will harm their businesses, and I can see their point. They say that this will be making it difficult for them to get this information and to comply with the law's requirements and make ends meet and pay for all their bills. They also argue that the law will make it more difficult for them to provide valuable services to their customers. I wonder what type of valuable services they're providing and who are their customers, but that's just a Side note. Some experts believe that the law will lead to consolidation. Sorry, consolidation. Consolidation in the data broker industry. And this, I believe this to be true. So you're going to have these companies that are located in California. They're going to eventually move out of California because they're restricted there, but they could still do their practices outside of California. And there'll be some consolidation in that respect. But they say that the smaller data brokers will find it difficult to comply with the laws because they can't move. So they'll probably sell to the larger data brokers out there. And I don't know. I find this to be a really interesting law. I never heard of anything like this that would be coming out of the States. It sounds like something that would be more Canadian more than anything else. California? They're helping up the consumers like that? Like, that seems like a pretty interesting law, but I don't know what to make of this. On the surface, it seems pretty good, but I don't know. I'd love to hear your take on this.
Didn't we talk about a while ago? I can't remember if this was a Canadian story or an American story, but let's pretend it's an American story. Some of these data firms selling data to police departments, right? Police departments and governments were buying the data to find out more about the people they were interested in. Does that include then these sorts of deals between state or state adjacent actors and these data brokers? You still have to wipe that data. Am I understanding that correctly? It seems unlikely that that's actually going to happen. So is this then just really a nice to say and not quite as effective in practice as the article, or maybe, you know, Governor Gavin would have you believe? Am I getting that right? It just seems like it's unlikely that relationship would be fractured by this, but we know that relationship exists. We've talked about it. So I'm not sure who's getting what here. It sounds to me, like you mentioned with the consolidation piece, that maybe the larger data brokers are actually pushing for this, right? That they're the ones who are trying to, I think that makes the most sense. If I like try and break down who benefits from this, it's really only them. Right? I don't see anyone else benefiting from this. The important data that is relevant to you as an individual is still going to be out there. The question is, who's going to have it? And I to me, it seems like the big data players benefit from something like this, right? They're kind of pulling up the ladder in a way, right? Do I have that right?
Well, the one question I have then, Alphabet and Apple.
Yeah.
They both reside in California. At least, sorry, that's where they're
Yeah.
So I'm wondering now, because they're notorious for collecting data. That's part of their game.
Sure.
If somebody submits a request to them, what is going to be deleted? And it would have to be a resident of California that would have to make this request. Somebody here in Ontario, they're going to just put it.
Why does it have to be a resident of California?
It's a targeted law for. From what I understand,
is it residents of California, or can you target California-based companies?
I thought the residents of California would have to have made this request, and the company would. You know, these are good questions. I don't know, but the one thing I would love to see is how those companies in Silicon Valley are going to have to react, because you know, I just named two. There's a bunch more, like Facebook.
I suspect, like I said earlier, and like you were kind of hinting at, the simple answer is they won't. Right? They're not going to change anything. They might change some definitions maybe, and like some methods maybe to skirt this. And the smaller guys will have to bend the knee and as you mentioned, get bought up or you know, wind up in the ditch. Right. I think that's how it looks to me. That's how it sounds. I don't know.
Maybe they'll just put it on a blockchain and it's anonymous at that point. And then they said they got rid of it. All right. Let's talk about nation states, hackers, and they're using the platform Discord to target critical infrastructure. And Discord is being used to host malware and steal data. Now, just on a side note, we do have our own Discord channel for our channel.
You're going to mention that.
I'm going to mention it because somebody noted this past week, there's an imposter for me out there that's targeting people on the channel. The only difference is there's a period at the end of his name. And so, I don't know, is this one of these nation state hackers? Do they find us to be worthy targets? I don't know. Anyways, these nation state actors, they're targeting stuff like Ukrainian critical infrastructure. So I'm assuming this is coming from Russia. And the malware is being hosted on Discord's Content Delivery Network, CDN. And so, yeah, it's being used for these nefarious ways. And Discord is a very popular app. Apparently, there's 300 million monthly active users. I fall within that 300 million monthly active users. I rarely see you on Discord. You might find
I'm active at least once a month. All right.
So yeah, it offers a variety of free features that drag people in, including voice and video chat, file sharing, and group chats. And yeah, this is not the first time this has been done in the past. In 2020, Iranian hackers used Discord to target Israeli organization. Imagine this is coming up now, given what's transpired in Israel / Palestine in the past week and change. Also in 2021, Russian hackers used Discord to target U.S. government agencies. And yeah, so this is very interesting. It's a growing trend right now. And I'm not sure exactly how we could stop this, but apparently this is making it attractive for hackers out there to target critical infrastructure. So take care if you're using Discord. Don't start clicking shit willy-nilly and you don't know what's going to show up on your computer. More malware and maybe your new Ukrainian power plant is going to go offline. Chernobyl Part 2.
It's weird. Discord is like this thing that I think is a little over its skis now as a service and as a platform. I'll tell you why. A few years ago, when I first started doing podcasts for a music festival that I was, you know, attending every year, Discord was the thing I used to record the audio because it was just a simple way, which was the original intent, right? I think it was meant to be kind of a gaming audio / voice chat channel avenue, whatever. And now, you know, when Payday 3 came out about a month ago, me, my brother-in-law, a few other people all got it, but all for different platforms. It was the first time I've used Discord with my Xbox, and the number of different connectivity options and service options and, you know, options for sharing and things like that on the platform now, they're huge. You mentioned we have one for the CBP. We share episodes there. We share content there. We share whatever there. There's a voice channel. There's all kinds of stuff. It seems to me that they've really expanded their service offering, and they haven't matched the expanded offering with the necessary security upgrades to prevent stuff like this. And I don't think that it matters much to the average user, because the average user is going on Discord, like I said, to shoot the shit with their buddies while they're playing video games, to, you know, stream videos, to figure out what the best, you know, season 2 Diablo character build is. It's not serious business until it is. And so you're seeing this story here targeting infrastructure, targeting government groups, targeting militant groups, targeting all sorts of stuff. It's become kind of this, you know, weapon of war, weapon of conflict in some cases. Discord, I think, really is to blame for this. Normally we blame like sort of errant user bases and people who are not paying attention. But I think in this case, Discord hasn't kept up with the requirements that come with being one of the biggest platforms on the planet. And it seems to me that they are not taking it seriously. Discord as well, you know, I think we talked about this when we started our channel. They're notoriously bad for spyware as well. Like I shouldn't say spyware, but for the data they collect from their users. And so it's a giant honeypot on that front as well. I don't get why they are not taking this more seriously. And if they are, they're certainly not telling anyone about it. And maybe they should start, you know, in one case or the other, but certainly this like approach where they just hope that no one gets nicked. It's not working. It's plainly not working.
It seems like it's the forgotten, the redheaded stepchild. Like nobody really cares much about Discord, but people use it. People use it a lot, right? For social media platforms, people talk about like Snapchat, Instagram, but I know there are different types of mediums, but Discord is kind of like generally forgotten, but people use it quite a bit, like even us. Maybe just nobody cares about it.
The monthly active users, you said, like 300 million. Yeah, like it's a lot of people, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. Just be careful for if you're on Discord. And Joey's blaming the Discord server itself. I'm blaming the people on Discord. You have to be more diligent when using it. But
I still think Discord, like this is a story that I've, you know, maybe we've not talked about on this show, but I've seen, you know, sister stories. Like Discord is a hacker's paradise. And that, you know, it's I think now kind of coming to the forefront here because it's too easy to use for these guys. So I don't know. I hope they fix some of these problems. Like there's no excuse for, you know, how many people use iPhones worldwide? Is it 300 million, 500 million, a billion? What's the number?
I would say it's over a billion.
Is it over a billion? Okay. So
I would
like
say well
so,
over.
So what is the number then? What is the kind of shelling point for users where the expectation shifts to the hardware provider or the software provider to do security? Discord's got to be there, right? I think it's got to be there.
I'm
looking up the number of iPhone users, I'm pretty sure.
I'm curious, what do you think it is? It's hard to figure out because if you look at the total number of sales of iPhones, it doesn't totally capture how many iPhones are out there because the 3, 3GS, the 4, sure. All that crap, they're long gone. I still have my 3GS, by the way. I was a one-time an iPhone user. I've since... That was the first and only iPhone I ever had. But I wonder how many iPhones are out there that are being used. I'd love to know the answer. Have to figure out how many phones were sold in the past, I think, 6-7 years. I think a six-year-old phone
the old ones don't update anymore. Like the fives and the five series phones no longer work with the wireless networks either, I'm pretty sure.
Get out of here.
Yeah, dead serious. Dead serious. Yeah.
What are they? Because I could still use over here 3G in Canada.
Try and turn on your 3GS if you got it. See if you can get any service.
Two reasons I wouldn't do it. Number one, I don't want to give up any information. Number two, I couldn't because my SIM card won't fit in there. Because my SIM card on my phone is the tiny one. And I remember that's it's true. A bigger one for that. Unless I get some sort of adapter or something. I'm not going to even bother. The one thing that I got rid of it, I'm going on a tangent here, or really in the weeds, is the battery died. This was after several years, 3-4 years. I forget what it was. It couldn't hold a charge more than 50%. So it wasn't the phone that really died. It was just a battery that at that point is like, screw it, I'm going to get something else. And then I was looking for something else and I was pissed off at what Apple was offering. It was just basically incremental upgrades. Like, screw this, I'm going to go somewhere else that's cheaper. And that's what I did. And then
no comment. I'm an Apple simp. I got the 15 Pro. So yeah, what can I say? Anyway, that's it. That's number 320.
You got to do a show in Access of Easy just on that. That alone should be enough.
I should be banned from doing the show for having an iPhone.
You're doing this on a Windows computer too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh. Windows running all the games. I've said this so many times. Like, this computer is for the show and my gaming needs. That's it.
So just that FYI, Joe doesn't even lock his doors or everything's wide open. He can take his data. It's an open door policy with him. I love it.
God, that's great. God bless everyone. We'll see you next week for 321. Until then, take care of yourselves.
Yeah. Take care.